VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, the nation continues to reel from the FBI's raid upon the home of former President Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago. I mean, it's been called an unprecedented action. The FBI Director Christopher Wray and the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland publicly acknowledged their approval of the filing of the search warrant application. President Biden denies having any advance notice of the raid. Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, stated, quote, "The Department of Justice has reached an intolerable state of weaponized politicization." He also stated, "Attorney General Garland, preserve your documents and clear your calendar." The Russian collusion hoax failed. The attempts to remove Donald Trump from office by impeachment failed not once but twice. Some are viewing this as an attempt to disqualify him ever from office again. Some have accused him of espionage. Some have called for him to be imprisoned. Others have hinted at even harsher penalties. Marco Rubio warning that those who are supportive of President Trump could be next. While such actions may be unprecedented in America, they are not unprecedented in this world. But where has this happened before? We're going to be taking a look at that today. But also the question, has our nation been lost as a constitutional republic? I mean, do you remember how Benjamin Franklin responded when asked if we had a republic or a monarchy? In which he replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." How stunning to hear Governor DeSantis of Florida say that the scene of this raid at Mar-a-Lago was akin to one in a banana republic. U.S. Senator Rick Scott said the raid was third world country stuff. With historical perspective on this topic, we welcome back to Crosstalk William J. Federer. Bill is a nationally known speaker, historian, author, and president of Amerisearch Incorporated, speaker on the American Minute daily broadcast. He has authored numerous books, including America's God and Country, Encyclopedia of Quotations, Who is the King in America, and Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. It has a subtitle, How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. Bill, thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Great to be with you, Jim.
So, Bill, what was your overall reaction when you learned of this raid at former President Trump's residence?
Hunter Biden's laptop has so much information on it of him doing corrupt deals and the dad knowing about it, the big guy, and our FBI, our Department of Justice, even under Bill Barr, sat on it for a year. And because they didn't want to influence the elections. And he gets a pass. And then Hillary Clinton's server. Here, she has classified information on her private server when she was Secretary of State because she was having the Secretary of State office coordinate with her Clinton Foundation so she could have meetings on the side so she could do shakedowns on all these foreign leaders and funnel the money into her Clinton Foundation stuff. And what was the FBI's response? To smash the hard drive, to smash the cell phones, to delete, delete, delete. They literally covered for her when she should be behind bars. These are the exact accusations that they're wanting to say that Trump did something wrong. And then the other part of it is, who's the final person to decide if something is classified or declassified? The president. And so presidents traditionally bring work home with them and read through stuff. And so there's a standing order that anything they bring home is automatically declassified. And so there's no way that he could violate his own declassification. But this is a targeting of the past leaders.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, this is banana republic stuff. You know, I wrote on the history of Mexico. You know, their first 50 years, only one president fulfilled it's his term of 4 years, right? 1824 to the first 50, because they were having coups. They were shooting cannons at the palace. They were doing assassinations. Somebody would flee into exile and come back, and they would capture him and execute him. The banana republic model is you kill the former leader and kill all the former leader's family and kill all the former leader's supporters. I mean, here's Pancho Villa. Are we all familiar with him? They did 1914. Hollywood even did a movie with him fighting a battle in a real battle. And but afterwards, he retires. He's on his, you know, Mexican farm. He's not involved in politics. And one of the new leaders, it's either Obregón or Calles or whatever, sends the assassin out to his farm to kill him. But this is also what happens in Muslim countries. They kill off the old leader and his family and supporters, right? Egypt, the Middle East, this is what happened. Russia, right? If there is a former leader, he's gone. He's poisoned, right? And even in the Bible, you have, you know, Saul, David, Solomon, but then you get into the split of the northern kingdoms of Israel, southern kingdoms of Judah, and you get wicked kings like, you know, Ahab and Jezebel and Athaliah. And what do? They kill off the former leader and all the former leader's families and all the former leader's supporters. This is the norm. It's a gang style, and America has been immune to this for our history because we set up this moderate self-control type of government where you respect people. But when you begin to see the government going after the former leaders, what we are doing is departing from being a republic and reverting back to a king, reverting back to a ruling party. And, you know,
and I'm going to have you pick up with that in just a moment, Bill. But again, I just point, and you've pointed out aptly here to the hypocrisy here. When we consider Hillary Clinton, when we consider Hunter Biden, even with all the China compromises there, and yet he's vacationing with the president of the United States. I mean, when Kevin McCarthy said an intolerable state of weaponized politicization, I mean, that's exactly characteristic of what we're seeing here.
Right. So Obama met with Lois Lerner, the head of the IRS, 147 times, and she turned the IRS into an enforcement arm of the Democrat Party to go after conservative organizations. And when she gets called before the U.S. Congress to testify, she just pleads the fifth and walks out. I mean, this is a clear admission that this office has been politicized into a weaponized instrument for the Democrat Party. And then we look at Obama weaponizing the intelligence gathering agencies and it to dig up dirt on political opponents. Right? Remember Bush pushed this through the NSA. We want to make sure there's no more terrorists in the country, and we were just going to monitor, you know, foreign you know, communications, and then it says, well, anybody in America, and then pretty soon it's every single citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's gathering all this. In political campaigns, there's a person whose job is called opposition research, and all they do is dig up dirt on the opponents. Well, who can do it better than the government digging up dirt on their political opponents? So the FBI has been weaponized. It's been co-opted by the political party that's in power. And unfortunately, they're doing the same thing with the military, and they're pushing out anybody. So tyrants, historically, have two tools in their toolbox, fraud and force. Fraud is they'll take away your freedoms, and you'll let them because they're lying to you and telling you that they're taking them away for your own good. But when people begin to see through the fraud, they don't believe it anymore. Then the tyrant begins to drop in the popularity polls. And the public opinion begins to crater. And the only tool they have left is force. It's like, well, they already don't like me. I'm going to pull off the mask. And so what do? They purge their military of anybody that's loyal to the old way of doing things, the old regime.
Mm-hmm.
And they one example is Diocletian, 3rd century A.D. He has his military fighting Persia, and it loses. And he asked his generals why, and they said, well, you've neglected having the military worship the Roman gods. And so Diocletian says, okay, military, get back to worshiping the Roman gods. Well, this is 3rd century A.D., so there's lots of Christians in the military because the previous emperor had been lax, and they could not return to worshiping the Roman gods, and so they're forced out. Once all the Christians were purged out of the military, Diocletian decided to use the military to force the entire Roman Empire to return to worshiping the Roman gods. And they would go province by province, arresting pastors, tearing down churches, cutting out their tongues, boiling them alive. It went on for a decade. it's naive of us to think that the same people that are pushing their leftist agenda through the courts, through Hollywood, through the education system, through every means possible, that they somehow won't be tempted to want to push their agenda through military force. And if they can't purge enough people out of the military, they'll just hire 80,000 IRS agents and arm them and have them be their enforcement. And so Lenin did the same thing. There were some old generals loyal to the Tsarist Russia, and he convinces them to not come to the Tsar's defense, puts the Tsar on a train to Siberia, and then calls all these generals to St. Petersburg. They show up thinking they're going to be put in charge. He just machine guns them to death, puts all his Bolsheviks in the military, and turns all of Russia communist. And Hitler did the same thing. He, by one vote, gets in as chancellor, and then they have a insurrection. Their capital gets set on fire. Evidence points to Hitler's own people setting the fire, but he wanted to blame his political opponents. And he begins to shame them. Some of them are caught on sexual improprieties, and they're out of their honor. They resign. Once he gets all of the former leaders out of the military, he decides to use the military, fills it full of his brown shirts and Nazis to bring about the terrible Holocaust. So, again, tyrants have fraud and force. They'll lie to you and take away your freedoms. And when you don't believe the lies anymore, all they have left is force.
And that's certainly what we're seeing, Bill. I am looking at your book, Socialism, and subtitled How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. In your on page 23, you have a section called Rise of the Tyrant. You've just been talking about that. You quote President William Henry Harrison, who warned that the tendencies of all such governments in their decline is to monarchy. The spirit of faction in times of great excitement imposes itself upon the people as a genuine spirit of freedom, and like the false Christ whose coming was foretold by the Savior, seeks to, and where possible, would impose upon the true and most faithful disciples of liberty. He has some other warnings as well. The love of power is a dominant passion of the human bosom, where this corrupting passion once takes possession of the human mind. Like the love of gold, it becomes insatiable. It is a never-dying worm in its bosom, grows with his growth and strengthens with the declining years of its victim. And sadly, it seems to be a commentary of what's unfolding here in 2022.
Yeah, and one of the things that we need to be aware of is projection. It's called psychological projection, where a corrupt politician will accuse their opponent of what they're guilty of. And so if they're seizing documents from Trump, there's a good chance that they are the ones that have seized documents, that they are the ones, whether it's Hunter Biden's laptop or Hillary's server, they want to blame him for what they're guilty of. You know, I talked about Hillary. Here she was as Secretary of State giving away a fifth of the U.S. uranium to Russia in exchange for a $145 million Russian contribution to her Clinton Foundation. She's colluding with Russia, but what does she do? She pays for a Steele dossier to accuse Trump of colluding with Russia.
Bill, and, tell you what, let's just pick up with that after the break. William J. Federer with us here today. We're taking a historical look at silencing opposition. Friends, it's amazing to see what's unfolding here again. Yeah, the terms banana republic have been used. Third world country stuff has been used. And friends, it's my thought, my opinion, we're seeing this happen right before our very eyes. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, what are comets made of?
Chris, comets are sometimes referred to as dirty snowballs. They're mainly ice, but with a lot of solid particles mixed in. As a comet goes around the sun, the solar heat and solar wind vaporize part of the comet, and we see the tail as those particles are stripped away. Now we find that sometimes not only is the tail stripped away, but sometimes the head is lopped off, speeding up the comet's disintegration. Obviously, comets can't last too long. Thus, they are a strong sign of a recently created universe. The Bible refers to these comets as wandering stars that don't follow the standard motion of the stars or the planets. They were created on day 4 of Creation Week, back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You know, we're talking about hypocrisy. We're talking about a double standard here that's taking place from Hillary Clinton to even the documents that were taken by Barack Obama when he left the White House. Bill Fitter, who is with us here today, Bill, you were talking about Hillary Clinton and this whole matter of giving uranium to Russia. And there were some pretty hefty contributions coming back to the Clinton Foundation. Shouldn't that raise our eyebrows?
Yeah, and so she pays for a Steele dossier to accuse Trump of what she is guilty of. And our country goes through years of Mueller investigations and all this. There's also Biden is extorting Ukraine, saying, stop investigating my son, or I'm going to hold back billions of dollars of U.S. aid. What do? They accuse Trump of extorting Ukraine. And it's this tactic of you accusing your opponent of exactly what you're guilty of, because then that crime gets in the media associated with your opponent. And the people make a mental association, and you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And once it's set in the people's minds, then if they point at you and say, no, you're really the guilty one. By that time, the water's muddied. The public doesn't know who to trust. You get a pass, and then the media talks about something else. So, David Axelrod was Obama's campaign manager, and he said on NPR Radio, April 19th, 2010, in Chicago, there was an old tradition of throwing a brick through your own campaign office window and then calling a press conference to say you've been attacked. So you do the dirty deed and you accuse your opponent of it. So I'm convinced the fact that they're accusing Trump of doing something wrong, they're guilty of it. Now, it's interesting. Every president can declassify stuff, and Trump declassified it just by bringing it home.
Okay, now
that's a whole other issue.
Well, I tell you what, though, on this issue, though, of the declassification, we are hearing constantly in the news about all these records that are labeled confidential, secret, top secret, or the SCI, sensitive, compartmented information. So you're saying, Bill, just by the fact that he took those documents home with him, that declassifies them just by that action?
Yeah, so who's the ultimate person that decides whether something's classified or not? The president. And the standard operating is that presidents would take work home with them. Everybody takes work home with them. And so it was a standing rule that anything the president takes home with them is declassified. Right? So they're not continually breaking the law. And so it would be Trump as president would be the one to decide what's classified and what's not. He gets briefings, right? From all he's the one. And even after presidents leave office, they still get briefed as to what the national security issues and so forth are. So, again, it has nothing to do with any truth behind their allegations. It's number one, projecting on him crimes that they're guilty of. Number two, we're talking about a corrupt FBI. I mean, they've come out of the closet. I mean, there's Clinton having a tarmac meeting with whatever the attorney general was at the time. And we see that, there's all kinds of favors being brought back and forth. It's not a fair playing field. And it is we need to make a big deal out of it, because if they get away with this, they're going to go after the family, and then all the supporters, and then they'll project and they'll say, anybody that is on the other side, you're the enemy because you're not submitting to us.
Okay, and so let me bring Marco Rubio into this. And he was on the air with Sean Hannity last week, Fox News. And matter of fact, last Friday in our news roundup, Dalton played this clip. And but I think it's very appropriate to bring it back here today. Marco Rubio, as he was on the air with Sean Hannity on Fox.
Look, I'm here in a very unique position in South Florida, surrounded by people that come from countries where this is familiar to them. This is shocking to Americans. But in Latin America and many of these, countries around the world, here's what happens. A group takes power. One of the first things that group does is they begin to persecute and go after their political opponents. And then when the supporters of their political opponents begin to complain about it, they begin to target them and they criminalize opposition. And that's what's happening here now. They took power. They are demanding, and you see it on Twitter, you see their public statements, they are demanding, they want Donald Trump arrested, they want him charged right now, they wanted him charged months ago, years ago, they wanted him charged. And I'm telling you the next thing you're going to see here, Sean, because it's the playbook, and that is they are now going to begin to say, oh, these Trump supporters, these Republicans, they're very upset. They're saying very angry things. We think they might be a threat. We think they're radical extremists. Let's start arresting them. The next step in this process is going to be that people who are supporters of Donald Trump or just conservatives complaining about this are going to begin to get harassed by, are going to begin to get labeled as potential insurrectionists and are going to begin to get harassed by law enforcement. That's the next step in this playbook, sadly.
And that was the current Senator Marco Rubio, as he was on last week with Sean Hannity. Bill, your comments.
Yeah, so the Trump supporters, but the government itself puts out a list of people that they consider threats, and it's pro-life people, soccer moms, anybody that's patriotic, anybody that has a Betsy Ross flag. I mean, anybody that does history. Betsy Ross was a Quaker. Quakers were the ones that started the anti-slavery movement in America. How in the world could you call somebody that's starting the anti-slavery movement a terrorist? It's like anybody that's patriotic, they're labeling. What we're witnessing is a coup. They are the ones that are doing the coup, and they're wanting to accuse us of somehow being insurrectionists. One of the interesting, Senator Rand Paul was grilling Biden's Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas about this disinformation governance board.
Yep.
May 4th of 2022. And Rand Paul says, I think you've got no idea what disinformation is. Do you know who the greatest propagator of disinformation in the history of the world is? The U.S. government. Rand Paul goes on, are you familiar with McNamara, the Pentagon Papers? Are you familiar with George W. Bush and the weapons of mass destruction? Are you familiar with Iran-Contra? He says, I don't want the government guardrails. I want you to have nothing to do with speech. Do you think the American people are so stupid, they need you to tell them what truth is? I don't trust government to figure out what truth is. Government is largely disseminating disinformation. This is Senator Rand Paul. So what we're seeing is they are the ones that are responsible for this type of behavior, yet they're wanting to blame their political opponents. Again, fraud and force. They've been using fraud, and we've been asleep at the wheel, letting them get away with it. But now we're beginning to wake up, and the only tool they have left is force. And so that's why you see an immediate purging of the military when Biden got in, and them labeling anybody that is not in favor of their agenda, a white supremacist or a Christian nationalist or any other derogatory terms. But they're the ones that are guilty of what they're accusing everybody else of.
So, Bill, and again, you've mentioned this a couple times in our interview today, the purging of the military and what we've seen, those who won't comply, those who won't take the jab, those who won't, succumb to the CRT, those who won't do the gender pronoun training, et cetera, that's all created for a purpose of what is the end game with that? Because we've seen militaries in the past that go down this route.
Yeah, it is. Wanting to, you look at the world right now. You have, we abandon Hong Kong, and the communists go in and arrest people, and now people are fleeing Hong Kong, and the media, of course, doesn't talk about it. Remember a year or so ago, there was freedom demonstrators in Cuba, and we didn't do anything about it. And now it's real quiet in Cuba because all those people were arrested. Afghanistan, a year ago, we had 20 years worth of young men and women losing life and limbs to free that area from the Taliban. And in one day, Biden gives it back to the Taliban with $85 billion worth of the most sophisticated weapons, making the Taliban the most armed force in the entire Middle East. And so what we're witnessing is literally a coup that's taking place in our country, and people are beginning to suspect that the government is not on their side. And, one of the other things I have brought out in my book is incidents through history of blaming the other side for what you're guilty of. And if I can share a couple of these.
Sure.
One of them, you had Robespierre, was the head of France during the French Revolution. He was the head of the Committee on Public Safety. It's a nice-sounding name. And he gave a speech in 1791 or 1794 called Terror Justified. And he said, lead the people by terror. Basis of popular government during a revolution is terror. Terror is nothing more than swift, severe, and inflexible justice. So here you have France going from a largely Catholic religious country with 1,000 years of traditions and then wanting to transition it into a secular republic. And the people didn't want to go along. And so here's Robespierre saying, you got to terrorize the people. You got to have the government commit terrorist attacks on its own population so that they'll panic and then surrender to the government. And so the idea of doing these type of things has been called false flags. Now, what's that? It goes back to pirates, and they would raise a false flag to lure an unsuspecting ship close. We're in need, we're in distress, or we're a friendly nation. And when they got too close, they would raise the pirate flag, and the other ship didn't have time to get away, and they would be struck with fear, and everybody on the ship would say, okay, okay, and they get looted of everything. So it was this immediate panic and fear that causes people to cave. So an incident is in Sweden. The king of Sweden in 1788 is Gustav III, and he wants to declare war with Russia because they were big competitors at the time. And the Swedish parliament would not approve funding for the war. And so Gustav had the tailor of the Royal Swedish Opera sew Russian uniforms and had Swedish soldiers put on the Russian uniforms and attack a Swedish outpost. Mm. And the media picks it up, says, the Russians had attacked. And the country goes into a panic, into fear, and suddenly Parliament says, okay, 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 we'll approve the funding. And so this idea of, again, orchestrating these things during World War II is called the Gliwice Incident. The Nazis wanted to invade Poland, and they knew that public opinion would not support it. And so they had Nazi soldiers dress up as Polish soldiers and attack a German outpost. And the media picks it up and says the Poles had attacked the Germans. And the Germans said, okay, that's the excuse we need, and we're going to invade Poland.
Yep.
This happened again during the Winter War. The Soviets wanted to invade Finland. World public opinion wouldn't support it. So the Soviets shelled one of their own Russian villages along the Finnish border and made it look like the Finnish did it. And they used that as an excuse to invade during the Winter War. Another is Japan. They had a little railroad on the coast of China, and they were itching to invade China, but world public opinion wouldn't support it. So in 1931, they claimed that there was an explosion along the railroad, and they used that as an excuse to invade China and kill over 100,000 in Nanking, China. Later, they did an investigation. There was no explosion. They made the whole thing up.
My idea,
if you blame your opponent of what you're guilty of so that you can go after them to destroy them and get rid of them.
No wonder why Nero could fiddle while Rome burned. Folks, we'll be back in just a minute. Bill Fitter, our guest here today, taking a historical look at silencing opposition. We'll be right back.
Part of the Thief in the Night series, here is a clip from A Distant Thunder.
Your right hand, please. That trick, young woman, is used in here 50 times a day. Now, if you want your child cared for, you must have your ID.
I can't take the mark. My baby is dying.
The Thief in the Night four-part prophecy DVD set is available from VCY America as our way of saying thank you for your donation of $25 or more. The set includes A Thief in the Night, A Distant Thunder, Image of the Beast, and Prodigal Planet. Call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829 or order online at vcyamerica.org.
Prince, it seems like we're just following the playbook that's been written before. I mean, the things that we're observing taking place in our nation, never before seen, are happening. And, yeah, they've been seen in third world nations. They've been seen in what's been called a banana republic. I just want to mention, I know several of you have gotten this, but folks, if you don't have a copy of Bill's book, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, again, how the deep state capitalizes on crises to consolidate control, we are sending this off to you, our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more here to Crosstalk. Just ask for a copy or copies of the book. Multiple copies to get out, and there is so much information as you read through just the communist goals that are listed in here. Bill and I did a full program just on the communist goals, but there is so much in this, and it will just really, it's an eye-opener. Again, this book is available, our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more. It's available online right now at vcyamerica.org. VCYAmerica.org, or by calling our switchboard at 1-800-729-9829. Just ask for the book, Socialism, 1-800-729-9829. And get a copy or copies that you can hand this out. It really is an eye-opener. Bill, I'd like to have you also address this. President Trump just had his first interview since that FBI raid on his home. And that was on Fox. And he said there is tremendous anger in the country and argued that the tensions must dissipate or terrible things are going to happen. And you hear that and say, this is really troubling, because it's as if there are those who are trying to provoke the nation into unrest so that more freedoms can be pulled, so that there can be greater control. I mean, what President Trump has said there is pretty startling.
Yeah. So they want to provoke people to respond, and then they want to accuse those people of being the bad ones.
Insurrectionists.
Yeah. You know, Turkey, 1955, had a leader named Menderes, and he did not like the Greek Christians left in Istanbul, even though it used to be Constantinople, the capital of the Christian world for 1,000 years. And so the plot was for a Turkish university student to put bombs in the Turkish consulate and in Ataturk's birthplace, which was in Thessalonica, an area of Greece. And Ataturk was the nice secular founder of modern day Turkey. Anyway, the bombs never went off, but the newspapers ran with the story anyway. And it whipped Istanbul into a frenzy, and they blocked off the Greek neighborhoods and went in there and smashed windows and tore down churches and destroyed graveyards and drove the remaining Greek Orthodox inhabitants out of Istanbul. Another one was Erdogan, modern-day Turkey. He gets democratically elected, and then he begins to usurp power, and a growing anti-Erdogan movement is growing, that this guy's getting too powerful. So what does Erdogan do? He flies up in an airplane, lands, claims there was a coup against him, pulls out a list of all of his political opponents, and accuses them of bad things, and has them all arrested and zip-tied and taken away, sort of like the January 6th people, and they've not been seen since. And now Turkey is being run as a dictatorship, right? So here you have somebody edging on being a dictator, and then he stages this event that he can blame on his opponent so that he can be the dictator. And another incident is Stalin, 1934. He's usurping power, and people are not liking it. And so there's an anti-Stalinist movement beginning. And so Stalin also had a supporter, Sergei Kirov, who was the party boss of Leningrad, who's giving these speeches praising Stalin and getting a little too popular for Stalin's comfort. So Stalin has an idea. He would assassinate his own friend, Sergei Kirov, and eliminate a potential rival, and blame the assassination on the anti-Stalinists. Nobody would suspect he did it because they were friends, and everybody would believe the anti-Stalinists did it because they didn't like Stalin and they didn't like Sergei. Stalin used that as an excuse to set up committees, to have investigations, to bring people in for questioning, and then arrest them, and then kill over 1 million people. In the first Great Purge of 1936 to 38. So that's the game plan, right? You stage something and then blame it on the innocent people and then use it as an excuse to get rid of them. And then we've mentioned it before, but Germany was a republic, and then Hitler is the head of the National Socialist Workers' Party, and they have an under-the-table violent arm, so like the Democrat Party has the BLM and the Antifa, and they would do violence, and they would go into the meetings of Hitler's opponents and disrupt the meetings. Now, they were nicknamed Sturmabteilung, which means stormtroopers. And then the brown shirts would lock arms and block access to public buildings and streets. And then they went into the cities and they smashed windows and set on fire over 7,000 stores owned by Jews. And then they had an insurrection. Their capital got set on fire. And that's when Hitler blames his political opponents for doing it. And, you know, a lot of information is coming out how on January 6th, there were at least 20 FBI agents implanted in the January 6th crowd. And the thought, oh, were they just there to observe or were they there to instigate? And there is significant evidence that they were doing something similar to what they did in Michigan with the kidnapping plot of Governor Whitmer, right? So here it turns out that the FBI planned the plot, paid for the meetings, got a half dozen low IQ guys who thought they were going out for beers, even gave some of them marijuana, and then captures these guys and says, we, you know, stopped this kidnapping plot when they were the ones behind it. And so it's coming out more and more that the FBI is pushing a political party. I mean, Ray Epps, he's on record of saying we got to break into the Capitol, and he's recruiting people to do this. And yet the FBI has not arrested him. And so the people that connect the dots think, well, gee, maybe Ray Epps was working for the FBI, just like those Whitmer kidnappers were working for the FBI. And so this is an important thing. You know, Victor David Hansen, a well-respected historian, was talking about the January 6th committee and how nobody believes it. And he says, why did the committee not investigate whether large numbers of FBI agents and informants were ubiquitous in the crowd? So it's like, okay, we got all these FBI agents in the crowd. Why isn't the January 6th committee interviewing them?
Then
you have a New York Times journalist, Rosenstein, who says that the whole January 6th thing was fake trauma, fake news, full of FBI informants.
It's just amazing. I mean, and why will they not release all the footage, you know, the video footage within the Capitol? Why do we not see the footage with the doors being held open for those to come on and on that goes? But friends, I hope you see and what we are observing going on, even with this historical look at silencing opposition. Okay, we hold the doors open. You come in. We now put you up in, I charge you with insurrection. You are now suffering in the prison below the Capitol or sentenced to, what was it, 6 months for Dr. Simone Gold right now, several days in solitary confinement. On and on this all goes. But folks, the playbook that's being put out before us here is nothing new. And that's what we're seeking to bring to your attention today. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. And I hope this is the right clip. I just located this from C-SPAN, in which Nancy Pelosi talked about what was called a wrap-up smear. Let's see if we can get the audio for this, if we can. And let me just do this here, because I think this is very important to the very issues we're talking about here. And it's not going to come through right now. I should have had this prepared beforehand.
Well, no.
You smear somebody.
Oh, here we go. Let me just start this over again. This is what you were talking about, Bill.
You demonize, and then we call it the wrap-up smear. If you want to talk politics, you call it the wrap-up smear. You smear somebody with falsehoods and all the rest, and then you merchandise it. And then you write it, and they'll say, see, it's reported in the press that this, 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 and this. So they have that validation that the press reported the smear. And then it's called the wrap-up smear. Now I'm going to merchandise the press's report on the smear that we made. And it's a tactic. And it's self-evident. But I think I'm worth the trouble, quite frankly. I love the fray. I'm not disrespectful.
And she goes on to it at that point, but she calls it the wrap-up smear.
Yeah, you know, Harry Reid lied about Mitt Romney not paying his taxes. And afterwards, they said, well, you lied. He did pay his taxes. He goes, yeah, I know, but it worked.
Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
Joseph had Potiphar's wife wanting to do lustful, sinful things, and Joseph refused. Well, what had happened? Potiphar's wife accused Joseph of trying to rape her.
Hmm.
You accuse your opponent of what you're guilty of. Nero set fire to Rome, blamed it on the Christians.
Yep.
You know, the Apostle Paul was in Jerusalem. He shaved his head, he had fasted, he went in there, and the religious leaders incited a mob riot, and Paul's arrested, and then he's in a trial before Festus. And Tertullus stands up and he says, this Paul's a pestilent fellow, a mover of sedition among the Jews, a ringleader, and tries to blame Paul for stirring up the riot. And Paul answers, he says, they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, and it's just been a couple days since I've been down there, and neither can they prove the things whereof they accuse me. So this is the tactic. They accuse you of what they're guilty of.
Let's go to Nick calling in from New Berlin, Wisconsin. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi. I believe that the United States is the mystery Babylon, and Babylon has to fall for that angel to fly through heaven in Revelation. And I believe we're on our way right now.
Well, we are falling. I don't know that it's a mystery. Babylon is such in Scripture itself, but we are falling. And Ben Franklin, I believe, aptly put it here, Bill, that indicated, you know, a republic if you can keep it.
Yeah, and
thank you, Rick.
I think that
or Nick
mm-hmm. that we are supposed to do everything we can to stand up for righteousness. And whether it fulfills prophecies or not, that's the Lord's doing. But in a sense, I think the people that sit back and say, well, it's all just prophecy, we're going to sit back and do it, they're actually contributing to the evil. And so that we're admonished in the Scriptures, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. And one of the revelations that I've been meditating on is Numbers chapter 30. And it's a silence equals consent chapter where if a daughter's in her father's house, binds herself with a vow in the day the father hears it, if he is silent, her vows stand. But if he disallows it, she's released. That's come down to us in a wedding ceremony. There's vows. And the pastor says to the church, if you're silent, you're giving consent, right? Anybody that's here that's against it, speak now or forever hold your peace.
Hmm.
Well, if your silence gives consent to a wedding vow, then the church's silence, if they're killing babies, is giving consent to killing babies. And if you give consent to murder, you're an accessory of murder, and you'll be judged for committing the murder.
Wow.
Right? If you know they're teaching kids, Jesus said in the beginning God made a male and female. Yet if you're driving by a school and you know that school is teaching that there's fluid sex and transgender stuff, and you're silent, you're giving consent to the teaching of something other than what Jesus taught. And Jesus says, if you allow one of these little ones that believes me to stumble, better than a millstone we put on your neck. So, anyway,
we'll be back in a minute. Bill Fitterer with us. We'll pick up calls after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Last week, Salman Rushdie was stabbed 10 to 15 times and barely survived. Many know him as a fictional writer, writing a book that, well, many say in the Islamic world insulted Muhammad and the Quran. For that, a fatwa was put on his head in 1989. And reportedly, Iran never let him forget. They were sure to mail him a card, a letter, every year reminding him they had not forgotten about him. Well, it took from 1989 to 2022. But now it's reported that the man that stabbed him swears an allegiance and loyalty to the head of Iran. Where is the media telling you about this? Oh, and another story. All the Muslims that were dying in New Mexico by a supposed Islamophobic individual turns out to be another Muslim. The media is not telling the American people the truth about either one of these stories. But we are, and that's why this network is so important. I'm Brandon House.
B- Bill Fitter, our guest here today on Crosstalk, and he is the author of the book Socialism. And I just want to mention it's available, our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more, available right now by calling 800-729-9829. 800-729-9829 or at vcyamerica.org. Lines are packed. Let's continue with Mark next. Hi, Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, my opinion is I think Biden is basically reinventing Obama's Tea Party opposition movement. I think this 87,000 IRS personnel is nothing more than a gimmick to more or less assimilate Hitler's stormtrooper, brown shirt, glass movement, especially from a militant standpoint, to basically blow out the small business and try to obliterate capitalism in order to instill total socialism.
Hmm. Thank you, Mark, for the comment. Bill, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in that. I think that we are seeing, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of BLM Antifa type people were the ones hired to be this new enforcement group. You know, the rioters in the cities that were doing all the Portland, Oregon, and so forth, it turns out, according to the movie 2000 Mules, that they were the ones involved in stuffing these drop boxes full of ballots. I think that a lot of these things are money laundering to funnel government expenditures, to funnel money into their partisan groups.
Hmm. Jim is our next caller. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Jim, I need to, if you're on speakerphone, come off speakerphone, please.
There we go.
Thanks.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yep, much better.
Okay. Yeah, I was talking to a lady Sunday, explaining to her psychological projection, and that's exactly what they do all the time. I try everything I can to warn people about all this stuff, and just like the COVID shot, you know, I was hoping our church people would know not to take it, but it was just like, no, we can't talk about it. It's just like, it's just banging my head on the wall. It's like, what can we do to get people aware of this and actually be concerned?
Thank you for that question, Bill. And we see this projection going on. We see the tactics that are being utilized and utilizing, you know, that what many people have respected this the office of the FBI and integrity and so forth. But when they see this kind of thing going on, what can we do? What can the people do?
Yeah, you know, in the break, you had mentioned how Ahab was so corrupt and Elijah met him. And Ahab said, well, Elijah, you're the one troubling Israel. And Elijah says, no, King Ahab, you're the one, right? So that's mm-hmm. that projection. They're wanting to blame you. Even Jesus, they accuse Jesus of having a demon when Jesus says, you're of your father, the devil. So they even did this tactic to Jesus, right? They're the ones that are corrupt, and they're wanting to blame the innocent ones. And again, Nero set fire to Rome, but he wanted to blame these innocent Christians.
So there was pushback even from Elijah to Ahab. In that regard, Jesus, of course, he knew that what was the Father's will for him in that regard. And certainly it would behoove us, Bill, in all of these situations, we must stay faithful. We must stay committed to the Word of God. We must not give up. We must continue to be the salt and light that God has called us to be.
Yeah, God chose us for this time. He knows everything that's going on. I used a little illustration, you know, freshman chemistry class, there's a beaker with a solution, and the teacher pours in a catalyst that causes a reaction, and some stuff precipitates and floats to the bottom of the beaker, and other stuff gets effervescent and bubbles to the top. So the time period we're living in is the solution in the beaker. The crisis of our time period is the catalyst, and some people's reaction is to run and hide and, you know, even deny their faith and take the mark of the beast. But other people's reaction is to say, God, use me. Where do you need me? You know, love the unlovable and feed the hungry and rescue those unjustly sentenced to death. And the early church, when they were persecuted, they prayed for boldness. So the crisis is, in a sense, a decision-making moment for each of us to show whose side we're on.
Hmm. Well, we've got several callers lined up here. We'll get as many as we can. Peter is first. Phoenix, Arizona, you're on the air.
Hey, gentlemen. Bill, I would submit to you that some of these examples take place not only in the natural that you've given, but in the spiritual as well. So just as Caiaphas prophesied, and he didn't even know he was doing it, that it would be better for one man to die for the whole nation.
Hmm.
I've seen several articles of this type over the last 5 years, and one that comes to mind in particular, and this is actually encouraging for us, was on, and I was able to pull this up on Google just by what I remembered from the headline itself. It's on May 9th, 2019, from the Insider. It says, Nancy Pelosi jokes that so many people in the Trump administration deserve to be locked up that there isn't enough room in jail.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was projecting, and, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Thank you for raising that. I remember that that quote coming about here, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of it, Trump got more votes than any other candidate ever in American history. Unless, of course, you think this guy running from his basement that gets six people to show up and has this habit of, you know, sniffing little kids' hair. And all the 27 states' attorney general saying, something's not right with this election, look
mm-hmm.
into it.
Yeah.
And, of course, Pence caved.
Gary, in Mesa, Arizona, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was at a Leisure World Republican Party meeting last night. Richard Mack was speaking. He won a Supreme Court case against the Brady Bill and in and around the Second Amendment. Essentially, it came out as this, that all prosecutions in this country from now on out are partisan.
Hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bill, we're down to 40 seconds. What would you want to leave with our listeners here?
Yeah, well, the Declaration of Independence talks about how the King of England would prosecute partisan, that if you were a patriot, you wouldn't get an honest court trial. That's one of the reasons that we had the revolution. But my book is called Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, and a lot of the stories we talked about today are in the book. I really encourage people to get it and even get extra copies that you can give to your pastor, give to your politicians. This is the time that we need to expose it. Pull back the curtain on the Wizard of Oz, and it loses its power over you once you see these tactics.
Yeah, thank you. Bill Federer with us here today. Again, a historical look at silencing opposition has been our topic, and we've really just scratched the surface on it. You'll find much more in that book, Socialism, and available for for support of $18 or more here at Crosstalk, available at vcyamerica.org. or by calling 800-729-9829. Bill, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Jim, and thanks to all those that called in.
And folks, continue to keep our nation in prayer. God bless you, and thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.